Molly opens the door for me.
May's in the bathroom again, she says. What do we do?
How long has she been in there?
I don't know, like 5 minutes? Where's Julie?
She went back to her room to plug her phone in.
She couldn't do that here?
I don't know.
Did you talk to her?
Didn't get a window. Listen, I'm sorry about what I said.
She raises an eyebrow. Apology accepted.
That was easy.
Well, you're the only normal, non-puking friend I have left, at least in this hotel.
Aw, thanks.
I've been looking up walk-in clinics. There's one 45 minutes away. Should I take her there?
That's the closest one?
Yeah, she says. Better than nothing, though, right?
I'm not sure what they'll do for her there.
She's really sick.
I know, but there's no cure for food poisoning. And I don't know if all that time in the car is a good idea. I want to add that if she wants out of here so badly, she shouldn't wait for an excuse to leave, but I bite my tongue.
May slogs out of the bathroom and gets back in bed. She's too weak to pull up the covers, so Molly and I help.
Did you get the cards?
She asks.
I got them.
Good, she says, closing her eyes. Molly puts a hand on her hip like a mom about to count to three.
May?
That was the last of it, she says. I'm fine. Promise.
Julie knocks. I let her in.
I got ice from Abe's,
she says, presenting me with a full bucket. She's winded like she ran back up here.
What'd I miss?
Nothing at all, Molly says, sighing. Instead of playing cards, we decide to watch TV, a marathon of bad reality shows. I sit next to May so I can apply a cold washcloth to her forehead. Julie curls up at the foot of the bed. Molly sits on the floor with a pillow behind her back and one under her legs.
Everything's fine. The mood has calmed. The wind has died down, or we can't hear it over the whining of the women on screen.
I welcome their whining. It's like a strange lullaby. I was anxious before, but my brain's docile now. I've beaten it into submission with stupid TV.
Do you think she knows what other people think about him, or is she not that insightful?
Julie asks about one of the women on the show.
If she does know, she doesn't care.
She paid a premium for the lifestyle, I say. Postulating about reality TV stars and celebrities is one of our favorite pastimes.
I bet he's the kind of guy where at first she was really into him, but then she realized it was just the idea of him. But she stays because he's great most of the time, you know what I mean?
Julie asks.
You guys are giving these people way too much credit, Molly says. They're idiots.
Julie and I look at each other. We're smug. We know the truth about these strangers. No one else could possibly understand.
May? You alive?
She moans. What do you think, Mabes?
It's about her personal brand, she says, her voice scratchy from vomiting.
Ugh!
Molly flops over. This is the happiest I've been since I got here. I've got the new crush giddiness, but with old friends. I'm so happy to be with them and to be the version of myself I am when I'm around them. I know this happiness is temporary. I think we all know that. This is borrowed time. But it's how we operate. We run fast from the hard truths. And when they get close, grab at our ankles, we just kick them away. Kick them away. But whatever's happening now with Julie, it's going to catch up to us. It's going to grab us by the ankles and bring us down, not let us go. It's going to change us. So I don't care about anything but this moment. I'm going to let myself have it, this afternoon with them, because who knows when we'll be together again? And who knows if it will ever be the same?
May, you should know I'm having a good time, I tell her.
The washcloth has lost its chill. I sink it back into the ice bucket, which is now just a cold water bucket.
Me too, Julie says. This is all I need. Me three, Molly says unconvincingly. She's fluffing her back pillow by punching it repeatedly. She's uncomfortable on the floor. You want the bed? I ask her. I'm fine, she says. Hey, if you had to watch a reality show about someone we know, who would you pick? Julie asks. In what world would I be forced to watch a reality TV show? Molly asks. Julie laughs. Other than this one, right now? Fair enough. Everyone we know is too boring, says the lump of covers formerly known as May. Sassy May. She hasn't thrown up in 2 hours, which means we've been watching bad TV for 2 hours, and I regret nothing. More water? I offer her the glass, and she drinks it down, no problem. I'm much better, she says. You've nursed me back to health. Do you want anything? Ginger ale? Toast? No, thank you. I'm good. But I don't think I'll be able to rally tonight, she says. You guys should go down to the bar. Don't feel obligated to stay with me. Nowhere else I'd rather be, Julie says. Same, I say. Ditto, Molly says. Love you. Mean it. Next time, we'll go somewhere warm, May says. Julie shakes her head. Heat is overrated. Speak for yourself. Molly's got a blanket around her shoulders. She pulls it tight. It looks like a fuzzy straitjacket. We continue watching TV. We add our color commentary. Molly and Julie have whiskey. I have gin. We order room service, and May offers to pay. She claims she's got a hint of an appetite. When we call down, they say they don't have a menu tonight. They just have pizza. We think that's weird, but we don't care. Pizza is pizza is pizza. Cheese and bread. Can't go wrong with that. Maybe the kitchen is contaminated? Molly says. May raises her hands to her face in horror. Don't say that! Julie shrugs. The pizzas, we got two. Pepperoni and extra cheese, come in boxes. They were ordered from somewhere, some localish pizzeria. They're cold. Don't, May says, before Molly can offer up the boxes as proof that something's awry in the kitchen. Pizza in bed, Julie says, picking the pepperoni off of her slice and eating it. Like we're 19 again. Do they have good pizza in L.A.? I ask Molly. They have good everything in L.A., she says. Do they have good anything in Buffalo? You're so funny, Molls. So hilarious, I tell her flatly. I feel compelled to answer. Wings? Only teasing, she says. You can't beat Maine lobster, Julie announces with a splash of pride. That's our thing. I don't like lobster. I don't like seafood in general, but lobster bothers me. Cooked alive in a pot of boiling water? Yikes. I remember being awed by the lobsters at the grocery store as a kid, trapped in dirty, overcrowded tanks, crawling over one another. Those blue bands that held their claws together, handicapping their God-given defense mechanisms. The water was always murky, a shade of brown or gray-green, and through it, they seemed to be nothing but legs, sadly awaiting execution and an afterlife of being slathered in butter and eaten by people who would talk about the quality and texture of their bodies. I felt sorry for them, but they scared me. I thought they were ugly. Do you eat sushi? Molly asks me. No. Does that make me uncool? Yes. We enter a long debate about which foods are cool. We discover we have staggeringly different views on this topic. The debate gets heated. A decade of friendship, and this is how it ends, Molly says, over grape nuts and rice cakes. After the few remaining slices of pizza have gone cold and dry, we abandon the food debate for one about music, then for one about which sides we would take in famous feuds, and then we fall down a dark rabbit hole that starts with a survey of the biggest dicks we've ever seen, turns to John Holmes, a hard left to the Wonderland murders, the Manson murders, Roman Polanski, Mia Farrow, Woody Allen, Diane Keaton, the First Wives Club, and ends with a sing-along of You Don't Own Me. After that, we're out of breath and out of steam. May's falling asleep. May, you need anything else? More water? She shakes her head no. Are you gonna be all right?
Yeah,
she mumbles. Make sure you sleep on your side, I tell her, propping a pillow behind her. Should someone stay with her? Molly asks me.
I'm fine, May says. I'm going right to sleep.
Want to come back to my room? Julie asks us. Molly shakes her head. I think I'm going to turn in. I'm tired. She might be lying. She might not want to be the third wheel with me and Julie. Sometimes Julie and I get on the same frequency, and it's hard for anyone else to join in. Or she's trying to give me the opportunity to be alone with Julie so I can initiate the talk. Lise, you want to come?
Yeah, I tell her. I'll be up for a while. Haven't been able to sleep.
You want melatonin? Molly offers.
Nah, I say. I've got the good stuff.
Oof, I don't fuck with that. I took Lunesta for a minute, and it wrecked me. You can sleepwalk off a bridge. For real, it happens.
Julie laughs.
That doesn't happen.
I'm not going to sleepwalk off a bridge, Molly, I say. Jules, I'm just going to change into my PJs real quick.
Meet you downstairs?
Yep.
Night, May. Night, Molly.
Julie reaches out to hug Molly. Molly leans back to avoid it, and Julie falls forward slightly. Her sweatshirt comes up, and underneath it, her skin has a bluish tint, like a bad bruise. Except it would have to be a massive bruise.
Sorry, Molly says. Lost my footing. I'm really tired.
Julie doesn't give up on the hug. Molly relents.
Night, Julie,
she says, patting her on the back, tapping out of the embrace. You remember how to get to my room? Jules asks me. I nod. She shoots me a thumbs up. Then she leaves, closing the door carefully behind her. Molly and I are quiet for a while. We listen to May's sweet little snores.
You'll talk to her now, Molly asks me.
Hmm.
You need to.
I know, Molly. I'm going to, I say. Her hounding me about it isn't the best motivation. She knows, by the way. She knows you don't want to be around her.
That's bullshit. I do want to be around her, but not like this. There's something wrong, and I don't know how to fix it. You know I'm bad with this kind of thing, she says. You know that.
I know. I wonder why she's allowed her flaws. Because her problems stem from the trauma of childhood illness? I should be more understanding. I guess after almost 10 years of excusing certain behaviors, I don't have as much sympathy as I used to. It's not good.
I'm bad with feelings and emotions and articulating. I come off as aggressive, she says. You can be honest without being harsh. But you're not soft like this one.
She gestures to May, who furrows her brow. She's not entirely asleep. She's listening. When I look back at Molly, it bubbles up. It hurts me, I tell her, that you think so low of me because of my past relationship. She's surprised I'm bringing this up now. I don't blame her. We've danced around it for years. She chooses her words carefully. Speaks them slowly.
You think I look down on you because of it. I don't. I just wish you wanted better for yourself.
Okay.
It frustrates me. I don't know what to do with that frustration. It breaks my heart.
See? You're good at talking feelings.
Shut up.
I make a lot of mistakes, Molly. I have in the past, and I will in the future. Will you love me anyway?
Don't be an idiot, she says.
That's her answer. I have to tell you something,
and I need you not to judge me. Okay, she says. You can tell me.
You were right about me with Tristan. I mean, nothing's happened. We just talk.
You just talk?
Yes, just talk. It started after the funeral. We both felt like she was still out there, and we sort of bonded over that, over missing Julie but not being able to mourn her.
Did you talk about being together?
No, it wasn't like that, I say. Not really.
What do you mean, not really? Do you have feelings for him?
Yes, I say. But I can't tell if I want him or if I just want someone. And there it is. Sometimes I surprise myself with the truth. I guess it's been there this whole time, living inside me, rent-free.
Why didn't you tell us?
Molly asks. I have to give her credit. She's being very gentle with me. Because it's not a good look. And with my past, I knew you'd be mad.
I'm not mad, she says. This is a different situation. Is it fucked up?
Yeah,
a little bit. All I want is for you to be honest with me and honest with yourself, okay? You need to face reality here, Lise.
I have.
Yeah? You know that nothing can ever happen between you two, right? You get that. You've accepted that.
Yes, I know I will never be with Tristan. I say, and I mean it. I know, Molly. There's nothing there. It's over. It's done.
Okay, good. Look, I'm not mad. Swear it. I am legit exhausted, though, she says. We'll revisit this unsavory subject tomorrow, preferably with alcohol.
Yes.
Do we have to hug now or something?
No, Molls, you're free to go, I say.
Love you. You're a complete mess, but I love you, she says, shaking her head. See you in the morning? I'll come by your room. You can tell me what happens with Julie.
Sounds good. We make sure that May is propped up by enough pillows and that her phone is handy. Call us if you need anything, I say.
Okay.
We realize we don't have any way of locking the door. It can be locked only with the key or from the inside. We shrug it off.
Night, Lise. Godspeed.
Night, Molls. The thermostat appears to be fixed. It's at a comfortable 72 degrees. I change into a pair of joggers and a waffle knit, hang uniform. Before I leave, I check the door to the balcony. It's locked. For some reason, I get the idea that the tall, dark figure I've been seeing glimpses of ever since I got here is standing outside my room. Not on the balcony, but across the lawn, at the edge of the woods. If I pull back the curtains enough so I can fit my eyeball inside the opening, I would see it there, a gangly shadow thing, waiting, waiting for me. The hotel is dead. There aren't many people around. In the hallway, I pass a couple dressed in bathing suits and cover-ups, their hair damp and chlorine frizzed. I forgot this place has a pool. I see a stressed-out maid gathering towels while balancing a spray bottle of cleaner on her elbow. I smile at her. She doesn't notice me. I need to focus. Strategize. How can I talk to Julie about what Tristan told me without raising any questions about my relationship with him? I called him as a concerned friend. That's the truth. I wonder how she'll react when I bring it up. Maybe it's what she wants. Maybe it's all been a cry for help. Busy contemplating my approach to the impending conversation, I seem to have gotten myself lost. I thought Julie's room was down this hall, but this might actually be where Molly's room is. There's a series of doors with strange names. There are no room numbers or arrows or maps. I backtrack. I ask the maid, "Excuse me, I'm looking for the Lenore room." When she looks up at me, I feel sorry for her.
She looks utterly beat. She doesn't verbalize her answer. She points. Back there? Left? She nods. Thank you. The second hallway looks identical to the first, but this time I find Lenore. I knock twice. It's open. The room smells horrific, putrid. I remember the decor being more playful than bleak, but it's oppressive. It's also freezing cold in here. Julie is in one of the armchairs. She's got an open bag of beef jerky in her lap. Her legs are up on a small accent table. Come, sit, she says. In this light, I see nothing of the Julie from 15 minutes ago. Her skin looks like putty chaotically molded onto her bones. Like underneath her face, there's another face eating its way out. Her eyes are sunken again, so deep she looks completely different. I can see her scalp through her hair, dry and patchy, like it survived a fire. What's wrong? She asks, innocently enough. Nothing, I say, realizing my left hand is still on the doorknob. I let it go. My right hand was in so tight a fist, my nails dug into my skin. I look down and see little crescent moons along my palm. Jerky? She offers. No, thanks. I poured you a whiskey, she says, pointing to a glass on the nightstand. What'd Molly say about me? Nothing, I tell her. Why? Did you see how she refused to hug me? She's bad with intimacy. She hugs you. The air in the room is so foul, I'm afraid to inhale. Bizarre shadows skulk in corners. The ceiling is high, but the walls are too close, and it's claustrophobic. It's crowded. It doesn't feel like it's just the two of us in here. It's like it's packed, shoulder to shoulder with invisible people. I feel their breath. The grandfather clock ticks. The pendulum swings. I sit down on the bed, take a swig of whiskey. Molly is Molly. You can't take it personally, I say. I confronted her about some of the stuff between us, how she's acted toward me since I moved to Buffalo. What'd she say? Julie doesn't stop chewing. She spits out a tooth, gives it a careless glance before setting it down on the table. She pops another piece of jerky into her mouth, unfazed. She said she was sorry. I don't remember if that's what she said. I have no idea what she said. I can't believe what just happened. Did you lose another tooth? Yeah, she says. That's it? She was sorry? Are you okay? I'm fine, she says in a tone that lets me know she's not going to entertain any more questions. That's it? She said she wanted me to want better for myself. And what do you think? I'm not sure. Elise, it's me. And for a second, it is. It's Julie. If I don't look at her, if I just listen, it's her. I pick at my cuticles and pretend we're back in our dorm, back in our twin XL beds, surrounded by cinder block walls and vents leaking secondhand marijuana smoke. I don't know. I did what made me happy. I did something for myself. Before then, any decision I made was motivated by what I thought other people wanted or expected of me. I didn't want to disappoint anyone. Lou, Rick, my dad. Lou isn't my mom. Rick isn't my dad. They didn't have to take care of me, and I guess with my real dad, I thought I had something to prove. Makes sense, she says, tossing aside the empty bag of jerky. When I moved to Buffalo, it was for love. It wasn't because of the affair. It was in spite of it, if that makes sense. I wasn't in it for the drama. I loved him, and he made me feel loved. It wasn't conventional, and maybe it wasn't right, but it was love. I liked to be around him. He made me feel good. I wasn't punishing myself. It wasn't because I didn't think I deserved better. If anything, it's because I thought I deserved too much. How do you mean? She says. She gets up, gets another bag of jerky out of her suitcase. I'm not sure she's listening to me. It's the first time I'm talking about this, and she's more interested in dried meat. I say, I don't know. I thought I deserved to be happy. You think that? Not just because the Bible tells us so? Does it? Fuck if I know. Clearly, I've never read it. I fake laugh. My eyes refuse to look at her. I can hear her chewing, teeth scraping together, the swish of saliva. I keep talking, mostly to distract myself from the sounds she's making. I mean, in retrospect, I thought I deserved happiness more than other people because of my past. Losing my mom, my dad being an asshole. I thought I had a right to happiness. It was owed to me. I didn't care about the logistics, who I was hurting. I felt entitled to it, and I'm not. No one is. You don't think happiness is a right? No, it's a bonus. Huh. Do you? Think I'm entitled to it? I've never really thought about it. I never felt deserving of anything. Jules, it's true. I wanted things very badly, but I didn't feel like I deserved them. Even if I became a famous actress or singer, or if I worked my way up at the label, whatever, I would feel like an imposter. I want things, and I'm sad if I don't get them or if it doesn't work out, but I'm also relieved. When I get what I want, it doesn't make me happy. It makes me feel guilty, she says. Like with Tristan. What about Tristan? I wanted him. I had a crush on him in high school. Not a big one, but when I saw him again, I was like overwhelmed by him. I needed to be with him. And it was easy. He wanted me too. He wanted to get married. And when we did, I was standing there across from him like completely, I can't think of any other word, but revolted. It's too strong for what I'm trying to say, but you get it. I almost ran out mid-ceremony. I thought, how can I do this to a person I care about? He doesn't want to be with me. He doesn't know it yet, but he will soon. And when he does, it'll be too late. He's too good of a guy to ever leave me. He'll be stuck with me and be unhappy. And I'll be unhappy too, because I'll feel guilty, because I'll get bored. I'll decide I want something else, and he'll bore me. Do you feel like that now? Can't say with the whole disappearing for 2 years. I don't know if it's improved our relationship or if we're completely screwed. I haven't had time to parse out my feelings, you know? Yeah, it'll take time. I wish I hadn't said that. I wish I'd said, I have to tell you something. If I let this opportunity pass and don't tell her what happened between me and him while she was gone, I never will. Molly can be so judgmental, Julie says. Not like she dates. She doesn't want to. She's happy alone. Julie snorts. No one's happy alone. Molly is. I don't know what her problem is. She thought I was dead, and here I am, and she treats me like this? I make the mistake of looking at her. Her eyes are so bloodshot, they're almost completely red. Her lips are covered in thick flakes of dead skin. You too, she says, and May. I come back, and you don't treat me the same. How? If you could see your face right now, I play dumb. What? Her shadow fans out behind her on the wall, making her seem bigger than she is. She licks her teeth, so sharp and uneven, I worry she'll cut her tongue. I love you all. You're the loves of my life, you especially. You're like a sister to me. You're more my sister than Jade is. I feel the same, Jules. I love you so, so much. You know that, don't you? I know, she says. But you should be careful. What? She leans forward, puts a hand on my knee. The more you love someone, the more you make yourself vulnerable to them, and it's easier for them to hurt you. Because you care so much, and because their love will inevitably fall short of your love. Your love is too big. And then, when it doesn't measure up, you're hurt. And that hurt turns to hate. To love someone is to hate them a little bit. We hate everyone we really love.
I don't know what you're trying to tell me.
Nothing, she says. You look tired. Did you take your sleeping pill?
No, not yet.
I got some serious pills when I got back. They refilled my prescriptions, no questions asked. Everyone knows my deal, she says, laughing. I think they're afraid of me.
The girl who lived. She winks at me. She loses eyelashes in the process.
The days of us standing hip to hip at the bathroom counter, sharing mascara and mindless gossip, they're gone. I'm looking at her now, seeing her now, and it can't wait any longer.
Jules, I know this is a hard subject, I say, wrestling with each word. But I think we need to talk about what's going on with you.
What do you mean?
You're losing your teeth. You don't
look well.
It's sweet of you to worry, Lise, but I'm good. I feel good, honest. You were gone for 2 years. Do you really not remember anything?
I already told you I don't, she says, lips curling.
I know, Jules, but you have to understand what that time was like for me, for all of us. I watched Molly and May cry at your funeral.
Did you cry?
I missed you every day you were gone, I say. I want to help you, but you have to be honest with me. She lifts her chin.
Don't you trust me?
Having to say it makes me nauseated, expel an aggressive sweat. My throat tightens the way it does before I cry, and when I speak, I sound like a stranger.
I talked to Tristan. I know you were eating raw meat. Tristan told you that? She asks.
I can't read her. I can't tell if she's surprised or upset or couldn't care less.
That I was eating raw meat?
He saw you.
He's been really struggling. Poor guy. I worry about him.
Jules, there's something I need to be honest with you about, I say, and down the rest of my whiskey. If I'm honest with her, maybe she'll be honest with me. Or maybe she'll hate me. After your funeral, I say, he and I started talking, as friends. We got pretty close. It was platonic, of course. We never saw each other, but we talked a lot. I don't know if I crossed a line. I wait for her to interject, to react, but she doesn't. I take a deep breath. I'd be lying if I said I didn't feel some type of way about him. I don't know if I ever would have acted on it. I don't think he would ever, even if he felt the same. I don't think he did. We were both lonely. We relied on each other to get through our grief. That's it, really. I needed you to know. I'm sorry.
Grief? But you knew I wasn't gone, she says.
She seems more bored than upset, like she's waiting in line somewhere and it's taking too long. I knew, yes, in my gut, in my heart, I believed you were still here, but it didn't make sense. Everyone thought I was crazy. Sometimes I thought I was crazy, holding on to something because I couldn't accept the truth. Tristan understood in a way that Molly and May didn't. That's why it was so good to talk to him. We could say to each other what we couldn't say to anyone else.
Okay, she says.
Part of it, honestly, I think your life appealed to me. You had something good going, a home, business, a partner. I wanted some of what you had, or to know what it was like. I was lonely. I'm sorry. I know how messed up this is. I feel so guilty. I don't want you to think I was trying to steal your husband. I know what it looks like, with my track record. But I swear, that's not what it was.
If you say so,
she says, licking her fingers. She appears unaffected. Julie, I start, not knowing how to finish. I shift. My foot hits something. There's a pair of glasses on the floor, poking out from under the bed. Vintage cat eye frames. The glasses the girl at reception was wearing. The one who checked me in.
Jules, why do you have these glasses?
You look really tired, Elise. Maybe you should lie down. You can sleep here with me. It'll be like old times.
No, that's okay, I say. I feel ill. Why do you have these glasses?
She shrugs. Girl must have dropped them.
When?
When she brought me up to the room, I don't know, she says, irritated. Are you sure you don't want to sleep over?
Yeah. I'm going to go upstairs, I say. I should get to bed. We can talk more in the morning, okay?
Stay here.
No, I say too harshly. I'm not feeling great.
Let me walk you upstairs, she says, standing.
I'm all right, really. I think we should both take the night. Talk tomorrow.
I'll come up in the morning.
She hugs me, pressing against me so hard, I'm sure her bones will puncture my skin. I can't identify the smell. It's like spoiled milk, hot garbage. It's so bad, I'm embarrassed. The clock gives a raucous cry. My shoulders shoot to my ears.
Don't let the clock scare you, she says. It's only time.
I make sure the door latches behind me. What the hell just happened? Why would she have those glasses? I don't have the energy to berate myself for giving up on the confrontation. Right now, I'm so disturbed, so drained. All I want to do is get back to my room. I shouldn't have had that whiskey. My head is spinning. There's toile wallpaper in this hallway. Since when? I must not have been paying attention before. It's a drastic deviation in style from the rest of the hotel. But I guess it's not entirely surprising. The Red Honey Inn is an amalgam of different styles and colors and patterns. Why not throw in some French country? Next hall over is Art Deco. Here you time travel when you turn the corner. You're in different places all at once. The wallpaper is the classic cream color with dark navy outlining various scenes. Colonialish men and women picnicking under a tree, children dancing with their hands clasped together, a rooster, a man chopping wood outside a farmhouse, a lady on a swing, a lamb nestled in the grass. My vision blurs as I inspect the wallpaper. As I hurry past, I have to stop and close my eyes to prevent a dizzy spell like the one I had earlier in May's room. I'm on the brink. I'm about to pass out. I take a deep breath. As I exhale, I hear a soft tap. I open my eyes. There's no one else in the hallway. Another deep breath. There it is again. Tap, tap. I stand sideways so I can see the whole length of the hall. There's no one around. I step forward, split my stance to steady myself, but it's not enough. The floor beneath me skews. I lean into the wall, rest my forehead against it with both palms flat. I battle for each breath. Tap, tap. My eyes register movement in front of me on the wall. The wallpaper is moving. The figures slowly distort. The picnic guests turn toward one another. The lamb stirs. The lady on the swing soars through the air. The children go round and round. They shrink and expand, double, warp. I close my eyes, concentrate on my breath. The tapping is more frequent, more intense. I press my ear to the wall. The sound is coming from inside. The sound is coming from inside the wall. I step back and I see it. A vent. It's low, long, and wide with an intricate white cover. I crouch down and through the narrow gaps in the pattern, I see nothing but total darkness.
I lean closer. There's a smell, like the smell in Julie's room, like something rotten. I get the feeling, the one I'm so familiar with, the one I torture myself with, the feeling that someone is watching me. Tap, tap. It's dripping. Something's dripping. But it's more than that. I hear breathing, deep, wheezing breaths. For a brief moment, I swear there's a third sound, chewing. I turn onto my hands and knees, stumble to stand. I'm too dizzy to run, but I go as fast as I can. I hit a fork at the end of the hall. I thought Julie's room was at the back of the hotel, but there's an adjacent hallway to the right. And across from it, there's another hallway, marked with a sign for the pool and an arrow. I go the opposite direction, toward the lobby, toward the stairs. I feel so weak, I'm going to have to climb up them on all fours. I don't hear any voices drifting out of the bar or the lounge. I don't hear anything at all. I'm alone. I'm totally alone. I lean on the banister. A hostile nausea raids my whole body. I can barely walk. My legs, my feet, they're cast in iron. There's a fog rolling in my head. I need to get back to my room. I need my car keys. I need to get out of this hotel. I'm sweating. It's streaming down, soaking my clothes. It takes all of my energy to lift the key, to open the door, to lock it behind me. I have to lie down for a minute. Close my eyes just for a minute. I feel so heavy, I think I might sink through the mattress. I think it might swallow me up.